Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshwa Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhakti Bhavati Naishtaki. Maharaj, please. Referee Brahman. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Atma Sanyeshva Satswapi. Atma Sanyeshva Satswapi. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Deha Patya Kala Tradishu. Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Please chant. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Deha Patra Kala Tradishu. Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. Tesham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Anyone else? Etha Patra Kala Tadishvu. Atma Sanyeshva Satsvapi. Desham Pramato Nidhanam. Pashyanapi na Pashyati. Deha, body. Apatya, children. Kalatra, wife. Adishu, and in everything in relation to them. Atma, own. Sanyeshu, fighting soldiers. Asatsu, fallible. Api, in spite of. Tesham, of all of them. Pramataha, too attached. Nidhanam, destruction. Pashyan, having been experienced. Api, although. Na, does not. Pashyati, see it. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Persons devoid of Atma Tattva do not inquire into the problems of life, being too attached to the fallible soldiers like the body, children, and wife. Although sufficiently experienced, they still do not see their inevitable destruction. Purport. This material world is called the world of death. Every living being, beginning from Brahma, whose duration of life is some thousands of millions of years, down to the germs who live for a few seconds only, is struggling for existence. Therefore, this life is a sort of fight with material nature, which imposes death upon all. In the human form of life, a living being is competent enough to come to an understanding of this great struggle for existence. But being too attached to family members, society, country, and so forth, he wants to win over the invincible material nature by the aid of bodily strength, children, wife, relatives, and so forth. Although he is sufficiently experienced in the matter, by dint of past experience and previous examples of his deceased predecessors, he does not see that the so-called fighting soldiers, like the children, relatives, society members, and countrymen, are all fallible in the great struggle. One should examine the fact that his father or his father's father has already died, and that he himself is therefore also sure to die. And similarly, his children, who are the would-be fathers of their children, will also die in due course. No one will survive in this struggle with material nature. The history of human society definitely proves it, yet the foolish people still suggest that in the future they will be able to live perpetually with the help of material science. This poor fund of knowledge exhibited by human society is certainly misleading, and it is all due to ignoring the constitution of the living soul. This material world exists only as a dream due to our attachment to it. Otherwise, the living soul is always different from the material nature. The great ocean of material nature is tossing with the waves of time, and the so-called living conditions are something like foaming bubbles which appear before us as bodily self, wife, children, society, countrymen, and so forth. Due to a lack of knowledge of self, we become victimized by the force of ignorance and thus spoil the valuable energy of human life in a vain search after permanent living conditions, which are impossible in this material world. Our friends, relatives, and so-called wives and children are not only fallible, but also bewildered by the outward glamour of material existence. As such, they cannot save us. Still, we think that we are safe within the orbit of family, society, or country. The whole materialistic advancement of human civilization is like the decoration of a dead body. Everyone is a dead body, flapping for a few days, and yet all the energy of human life is being wasted in the decoration of this dead body. Sukadeva Goswami is pointing out the duty of the human being after showing the actual position of bewildered human activities. Persons who are devoid of the knowledge of Atma Tattva are misguided, but those who are devotees of the Lord and have perfect realization of transcendental knowledge are not bewildered. A very famous and beautiful verse. Deha patra kalatradishu atma sanyesh vasatsvapi tesham pramato nidhanam vashyanapi napashyati. Did you discuss the context in which these verses were written? These are the first verses of the second canto. Prabhupada is writing them at the Radha Damodar temple, having struggled mightily to publish the first three volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam, the first canto, with practically no resources whatsoever, living in great simplicity, poverty, and ecstasy, writing these purports every morning. There's no ISKCON. He has one casual disciple somewhere. he's 68, 69 years old. And at this time, he also, around this time, he composed a poem, the Varaha Astaka, in which he talked about this theme. He said, "Now where are my beloved family members? I'm sitting here alone in Vrindavan, and I laugh." He said, where are my loving parents? Where are my sons and daughters and my wife and my friends? Where are they all now? It is nothing but a list of names only. So his comments on this verse are very poignant for this reason. It is not just a theoretical idea, but very deeply realized. So I'd like to talk a little this morning about the subject of loving relationships, because these are the loving relationships to which we are generally accustomed. Those of the, apatya kalatra and adishu, everything in relation, our families and everything in relation to them. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about loving relationships. He says in the 12th chapter that the best thing is if you and I have a loving relationship. If you love me unconditionally, that's the highest thing. Then very ecumenically, he gives a lot of alternative choices. He says, if you can't do that, then abhyasa yoga yuktena, follow the rules and regulations of bhakti yoga. So that's what we do in Krishna house. That is sadhana bhakti, acting as if we loved Krishna. We may not feel like bowing down to Krishna, but we bow down to him because we are practicing. And we may not feel like pulling in and asking him to let us serve him, but we do it because we're practicing. And Krishna says if we practice by following these rules and regulations, then we'll develop the desire to attain him. So short of love, if we at least know the goal, then we can practice and work towards that goal. And then he says, if that's too much trouble, yes, then work for me. And we see people like this. They can't really envision living in a temple and getting up early, and they can't. It makes no sense to them to chant 16 rounds, or the principles seem difficult. But still, they enjoy working for Krishna. They like to sacrifice some energy, and it's very natural and fun for them to do so. So sometimes they may be employees or sometimes volunteers, but they enjoy working for Krishna. So that's another alternative. And then he says, even if you can't do that, then give up the results of your work or work for some charity, some higher cause, some selfless work, because that will bring you more peace of mind than just meditating. Meditating without Krishna consciousness is, at its heart, a very selfish activity, isn't it? I'm not doing anything for God. I just want to find out if I can be him, or find out how high I can get, or what kind of far-out experience I can have. It's all about me, me, me. See, unless we understand devotional service, then that's all we have as an alternative. So these are steps, options, but best if we could love Krishna unconditionally, unequivocally. So that is the ultimate loving relationship. In the biblical tradition, they talk about two kinds of love, eros and agape. Eros is a sensual, physical love for another person. And agape refers to love of God. So these are two different emotions, although they are both called love in English. In the former, there is always some condition. In other words, eros, or some materialistic love. It is love. Don't misunderstand. But it is love with a motive. Srila Prabhupada was once talking with a wealthy gentleman who was hosting him at his house with some disciples. So the gentleman sat Prabhupada and the disciples. He said, let me introduce my family. He brought in his wife. He said, and this is my son, and this is my son's wife, and this is their daughter and their son, and this is my other son, and this is my daughter and her family, her husband. And this went on for some time. And when the host left the room, Prabhupada leaned to his disciples and said, this is my sex life. So what the man was doing, in essence, is introducing, this is, you know, this is his accomplishment, his pride, his deities, his family. So this is one point of view, that when there is no connection with Krishna, then just to love the family is a great accomplishment in Kali Yuga. In fact, in the 12th canto it says if somebody can keep a family together in Kali Yuga, they are considered a great sadhu and saintly person. We don't demean that, but without connection to Krishna, that love is just like the verse is explaining. It is fallible. It is an investment and taking shelter of something which cannot really protect us. Rida Ananda Maharaj tells this interesting story about sitting with Srila Prabhupada in New Vrindavan. He said they were sitting and a little kitten walked up to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada and all the devotees were thinking, oh, we've got to shoo this away. And then the cat jumped on Prabhupada's lap. And again, the devotees were aghast, thinking he was contaminating. And Prabhupada began stroking the cat, and the cat began purring. And Prabhupada said, this is love. It is natural for one living being to have affection for another. So it is, I took from that story that it is not antithetical to Krishna consciousness to have loving feelings for other people. In fact, it is not required if we love Krishna that we hate everybody else. There was a cartoon in the Alligator newspaper. Some years ago, there was one very particularly obnoxious minister in the plaza, Turlington Plaza, who was screaming at people and intimidating them to try to get them to join his religion. So the cartoonist wrote the sign, the guy standing there with the sign that says, God hates just about everybody. What's that? God hates just about everybody. In other words, if you love God, if you're really religious, then you too better hate just about everybody. Put down this group and that group and that group. Everybody. Even Anuttama Prabhu tells a story. He met a rather conservative fellow on Sankirtan one time. When he said, so everybody who doesn't believe in my religion is going to hell. And Anuttama says, so everybody who doesn't believe your way is going to hell. That's right. And, well, what about other Christians who believe slightly different? Oh, they're going to hell too. And what about this? And he kept saying, yeah, they're going to hell. And then he said, and even in my own church, there are people who are going to hell. So loving God does not mean we have to hate everybody else. This is my point. But we need to distinguish between these two kinds of loving relationships. Those which are ephemeral and based on a bodily connection, and those which are perpetual. The only loving relationship that will really protect us, of course, is loving Krishna when we leave this body. That, Krishna says, will save us from the greatest type of danger. But that it does not mean that we have to hate everyone that if we love Krishna. In fact, that is a neophyte understanding, because the very advanced devotees we see have loving relationships with all living entities. They have no friends or enemies. They have no discrimination even between those who are practicing spiritual life and those who don't, because they see everybody as more advanced than they. This is the Uttama Adhikari, this almost unimaginable vision. So we could see in Srila Prabhupada's life and character that he did not display any kind of antipathy to people that would alienate them from Krishna consciousness. If we behave in such a way that we're looking down, we're criticizing, we're finding fault with people in a way which is simply based on our egos and trying to make ourselves or our beliefs more prominent, then this is a kind of behavior that is inappropriate for a devotee. As devotees, we should see people as spirit souls, and as such, see their good qualities, see how this person has somehow risen through all these species of life to be a human being, and now has this great opportunity to understand Krishna. So if we have a negative attitude towards people, obviously they're not going to be very attracted to Krishna consciousness. If we have an appreciative attitude, if we try to see their good qualities, we try to fan the spark, as Prabhupada said, if we show some love, broad-mindedness, open-heartedness to them, then that will help them advance in Krishna consciousness. Krishnadas Kaviraj says that the principles of religion are not established by logic and debate, but by what? By the behavior of the devotees. So, and just as we speak of behavior of devotees, look who arrives. the very exact. Brahmacharya Prabhu is a professional dispute resolution expert. So it is a fact that if we think that we will be safe and protected because our families are always there for us, then we have missed the point. I'm thinking of these biblical events when Jesus is collecting some disciples and some of them want to stay with their families. He makes some very, very heavy statements, remember? Yeah, one who puts his hand to the plow but looks back is not fit to enter the kingdom of God. This was just one man who just wanted to go and bury his father who had just passed away. He wouldn't even give him a day off. Let the dead bury the dead. That was the other. Yes. So sometimes we have to speak a little strongly to make the point, because people are very attached. We're naturally attached to our family members. Radhanath Maharaj gave this very nice class, those of us who are in New Vrindavan, on Mother's Day. He's speaking about all of these various pastimes related to Lord Chaitanya and his mother and other great personalities and their mothers. And he said, I could not appreciate my mother until I was an old sannyasi. So the sacrifices, the really selfless devotion that a mother gives to the child is really paralleled only, or can only be compared with really the selfless love of God, which is inherent in the living entity. This, Prabhupada said, is the closest that we can come to understanding love of God in the material world. When Krishna was had killed Kamsa and reunited with Devaki and Vasudeva, they had heard all these incredible things he'd done, so they couldn't see him as their son. They offered him awe and reverence. They couldn't even embrace him because they realized he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Krishna did not care for that awe and reverence mood, so he began speaking in a very interesting way. Oh, all the things that you would have done for me, I know, if I had only been able to grow up with you. I'm sure you would have given me so much love and affection. And by speaking in this way, he invoked their parental feelings again so they could accept him as their son. So these are valuable parts of the human experience. The love of a child and parent, the love of a husband and wife, love of a friend and friend, but they are subordinate to the love of God, which is the goal of human life. So if we can make this distinction, then we can take this verse in the proper context. I remember when I was a new devotee, I thought that my family was just to be rejected. In fact, even before I was a devotee, I was reading these Mayavadi books, Krishnamurti and others, and they're books in which they say, in which the author says, you do not need any books. Then if you want, you could order his lecture tapes in which he says you do not need to listen to any lectures. So naturally I was a little confused. But I had enough of an inkling of spirituality to know that my parents were in Maya. That much I knew. So I just left home and did not treat them very respectfully in doing so, and made them very unhappy, all of which later I realized was completely unnecessary. And if I had been more mature or better guided, I would have dealt with it much differently. So it's these persons are fallible soldiers. They cannot protect us. But at the same time, we don't have to dismiss them, right, or treat them poorly in order to express our love for Krishna. In fact, if we love Krishna, then we will also treat them very nicely. This was Srila Prabhupada's wonderful quality. You know, that everybody loved him. He would say, rascals, fools, and people would not be offended. Because there is such a basis of love. Rabindra Sarup Prabhu tells a story. Prabhupada gave a press conference at the airport in Philadelphia. And after it was over, he was leaving. The two of them were leaving, and this one reporter came running up breathlessly with his cameraman. He was late. He had missed the event. So he asked Prabhupada, would you please consent to a little interview, because he needed to come back with a piece. So Prabhupada graciously agreed. And so the man, after fixing his hair and getting the camera all set up, he says, so what sect of Buddhism are you? And Prabhupada answered, we have nothing to do with the Buddhists. We are teaching the absolute truth. And if you are truthful, you will accept it. So Rabindra Prabhu's commentary on this was, here the man came for a story, and he was encountering somebody who was treating him with more compassion than perhaps anyone else in his entire life, just trying to help him as an individual overcome his problems through spiritual knowledge. If you are truthful, you will take it also. So this is the quality of truly saintly people. They are beloved to everybody. Dhira dhira jana priyo priyakaro nirmatsaro pujito. The six Goswamis were described by Srinivasacharya as beloved both to the gentle and to the ruffians. So if we read verses like this and take them in the wrong way, then we will be missing the point. In the material world, everyone is suffering. The death rate is 100%. There is no exception for people who are in Krishna consciousness. I mean, we also suffer the pains and the agonies of the material bodies that we have. The difference is that we know this is our last time around. Prabhupada was asked, will chanting Hare Krishna cure cancer? He said, yes, chant Hare Krishna and you'll never get cancer again. So we are fortunate, very fortunate in that respect, that we have a way out of the problems of our life. And the people who are not so fortunate, if we actually appreciate Krishna consciousness, we'll have compassion on them. If we actually value it, we'll automatically feel that. That's a very advanced emotion, you know, to have compassion on someone. The poet said, the quality of mercy is not strained, but falleth as a gentle rain from heaven. You can't force it, in other words. But when you are mature, it will automatically manifest. If you appreciate something you have, you'll automatically feel compassionate for people who don't have that thing. That's the better quality of the human being. So the means to loving Krishna is bhakti yoga. The symptom of advancement in bhakti yoga is that we feel compassionate and loving towards other living beings. The symptom of being a neophyte is that we're always in a quarrelsome mood, or we find fault with people, and that disturbs our minds so that we can't think of Krishna lovingly. So these are some thoughts on this verse, something about how to distinguish the loving relationships. I did want to add that there are loving relationships amongst devotees also, but they're based on a different principle. Most loving relationships are based on what Prabhupada described as extended selfishness. I love myself, therefore I love my family because they're related to me. See, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, in fact, there was an interesting discussion on this. Krishna says essentially that people can love themselves only because God loves them first. And, yeah, so because Krishna, oh yeah, it was in reference to the cowherd boys. Yes, when Sukadev described how the mothers loved Krishna's expansions as the cowherd boys, even more than their own sons, who had been kidnapped by Brahma. Pariksit Maharaj had a problem with that. He said, how is it possible that they could love these replacement boys more than their own, very own sons? And in that section, Krishna explains that we love others only because we love ourselves. And we're able to love ourselves only because God loves us first. So naturally, when God is present as others, we love God more than we would love the expansions of ourselves, the children and family and so forth. So that's a symptom of loving God. Automatically, we have affection for others. But amongst devotees, we have a special affection because of these qualities of, rather because of the commonality of loving Krishna. So those relationships are manifest in six ways. What are those? Nectar of instruction. Right, giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasad, accepting prasad, inquiring confidentially, and revealing one's mind in confidence. And what is the most important part of dispute resolution? And confidentiality. Yeah. So, yeah, being able to hear from others and not go blabbing it around. And to disclose our true feelings, our minds and heart, not to these fallible soldiers. This is the point. It's a very touchy point because we're used to confiding in our loved ones. But because they don't understand Krishna consciousness, it's difficult for them to help us spiritually. So we need to find some confidential relationships amongst devotees, even if we're new to Krishna consciousness. We need to find some devotees in whom we can trust and then disclose what we're really thinking and feeling. Even if we have problems, you know, if we're having difficulties, we need to be able to talk with some devotees about that. So those loving relationships will help us advance to our ultimate loving relationship with Krishna. Any comments or questions? Thank you. Can someone handle the mic, please? Okay. I'll try to keep up loving relationships with the cooks.
So there was a man whose wife died, and he approached Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur to accept him as a disciple. And he said, I have no feeling for my wife. She died and I'm all ready to enter my renounce order. Then he said, if you cannot feel for your wife, then how can you feel for Krishna? So then he discredited him that way. So that's one example of importance of having soft heart.
We can't have some feelings. Sometimes I looking at Prabhupada's life, I think of he was like almost amazed by the degradation in the West. The social fabric, the intensity of relationships that he grew up with was so much different than what he encountered even in the 60s in America. And what to speak of now when it's even more degraded. But it's very natural that there's a great bond between family members. It's just that those bonds cannot help one spiritually. So this is a very good point. Yes. You just leave it on. Yeah.
I heard in one of the lectures, Prabhupada said when he got married, somehow he didn't like his wife and he wanted to marry again. So his father said, you already have gone through this trouble once. Why don't trouble? That's what I believe he used the word. And why do you want to do it again? So isn't like that a different understanding?
Well, yes, that is a true incident that Prabhupada had a planned marriage, arranged marriage, as was standard in that society. And afterwards, after the marriage, he thought he would marry again, which was also acceptable at that time, because he thought this, that he wasn't so fond of his wife. And his father discouraged him. He said it would complicate his life. So Srila Prabhupada had that experience, and Abhiram Prabhu was one of his servants at one time. Abhiram told me that Prabhupada was sitting with him once and reflecting. Of course, we read about Prabhupada's wife, that she sold the Bhagavatam for the tea biscuits. And that was the last straw and Prabhupada left. But Abhiram told me that he was sitting with Prabhupada in Calcutta once, and Prabhupada was reflecting, and he said, actually, I could not have asked for a better wife. She was very good in so many ways. So he was speaking fondly of her, even as a sannyasi, and in a way that was almost saying, I didn't really treat her as well as I should have. This was the implication. And Prabhupada did make an arrangement for a pension for his wife and children later in his life. So there was a very interesting relation. We should not conjecture too much about that. But I did want to share that with you, that one little statement Prabhupada made. He was definitely not disdainful of his wife. He was just saying, here I am in Vrindavan, and where are all my relatives now? Stephanie's got them.
I was just wondering, why are children and wife compared to fighting soldiers? I didn't really get that analogy.
Because we take shelter of them. We think that, okay, even if my life gets messed up in so many ways, I can always go back. I've got my wife, I've got my children, I've got my family. They will protect me. Yeah, isn't it? I mean, don't we feel like some sense, okay, I'll try Krishna consciousness, but if it doesn't work out, I've always got my loved ones I can go back to. See, so that's a natural inclination that we all have. And therefore, we want to develop our family for protection. It's just that they can't really do the job. In the fourth canto, there's the story of Paranjan, who builds a whole fortress made of family members, but what's it, Kalasarpa gets in there. The snake of time gets in and breaks down all the defenses. And then he has to suffer the loss of all of his protectors one by one. It's a very heartrending story told by Narada Muni.
Well, just like in family life, how much affection or how much renunciation should be there in family life?
None whatsoever. Any question? Other question? If you have a Krishna conscious marriage, then you have a friend. See, your spouse is also your friend and is also a devotee, and a devotee with whom you can share these six loving relationships. You see? So it is much easier if one has a Krishna conscious spouse. Then that affection can be, which is natural in every marriage and every ordinary normal relationship, that affection can be used as a springboard for spiritual advancement. So it's wonderful to serve Krishna together in a household situation. Bhaktivinoda talked about it. Ye dina grihe bhajana deke grihe te goloka vaya. One day, I was doing my devotional service at home, and my entire house transformed into Goloka Vrindavan. That happens at Brahmatirthas regularly, right?
You know, just put aside Krishna consciousness for the moment, which is easy for me to do. Let's say you're a couple and you're just engaged in service. Just forget you know what it is. Let's say you're volunteers at a hospital as a couple. Something like that. Whatever happens to be your sattvic place, that couple will generally have a much greater appreciation for each other, just because they're making the central point something greater than themselves. But as we make the circle very small, just the husband and wife and the kid, then when the attachment increases so much, that that's where fallible soldiers enter. Because when it comes time to really saving you spiritually, it does the opposite. But just a family engaged in a mundane service is so much happier. It's very easy to observe. That's doing something good for others. As a family unit, they're so much better off. Imagine if that family unit was doing something in the spirit of bhakti, even more so. And this is what Krishna says in the 12th chapter of the Gita.
Yes, that's the point. Those loving relationships can be engaged in Krishna's service, but they're not sufficient in and of themselves. And this is why actually the renunciates play such a valuable role in society, because the householders tend to be very wrapped up in their family affairs. And the renunciates can come and remind them that these are not going to be everything that you need for a successful life.
Job of the preacher is to those who are comfortable make them uncomfortable, and those who are uncomfortable make them comfortable. So Maharaj was saying a few days back.
Wow, what a job description. Do they pay you well?
We also read in Srimad Bhagavatam that what did Maharaj say?
He said, causing trouble is its own reward.
So we read in Srimad Bhagavatam that with devotional service comes knowledge and renunciation. So does a householder also get renounced as he progresses in spiritual life?
Yes. The analogy is given of a coconut. That a coconut, when it's left in the sun, with the inner fruit withdraws from the outer shell. So the householder is supposed to become detached within while remaining dutiful and attached externally. So if one stays in devotional service and continues doing all of one's duties, then that detachment comes, but it does not need to manifest visibly. This was a big problem in the early days of our movement when young householders had children and thought, by a very immature understanding of verses like these, that they should become detached at a very early age. And the children grew up with insufficient care and affection from their parents, and that was difficult for them. So that is something we've learned, and a mistake we don't want to repeat. So in the fifth canto, Lord Rishabhdev says, Gurur Nashishyat, Swajano Nashishyat, that one should not become a spiritual master or a parent or a teacher of any kind if one cannot deliver one's dependents. So it's on the same level. See, parenthood and spiritual teaching as far as that statement is concerned. So it's a great responsibility, and to renounce it is in which mode? Anyone remember from the... to renounce something because it's troublesome is... Remember? It's passion. Yeah, it's a mode of passion. Oh, it's too... I have this family, it's so much trouble, I think I'll take sannyas. See, this is the mode of passion. And that causes... What's the result of the mode of passion? What? It causes distress. So one has to be attached externally and detached within. Very dutiful, but recognizing the limitations of these relationships. And like Maharaj was saying yesterday, when you have kids, it is... I don't want to... No. Sometimes they may turn out very nicely, and sometimes not. You never really know. Well, I was trying to avoid that word. Yes, it is a crapshoot. You don't know what's going to come up from the dice.
Yeah.
that within family life, sometimes devotees may become comfortable in family life. So how does one distinguish between living a Krishna conscious family life and or living in a attached family life? So because how does one distinguish between, because it's one may be living in a attached way and maybe thinking that he is doing devotional service, and ultimately in the end one will know that he is not detached yet.
Well, one thing is that you can't judge a book by its cover. So just trying to evaluate people based on the externals is not a good way to answer that question. So someone may appear to be very attached but be doing very important service. In the Chaitanya Bhagavat, I believe, we have the story of Gadadhar Pandit meeting Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So Gadadhar Pandit was a very renounced devotee and a great devotee, and he had been advised, you've got to meet this great, incredible devotee named Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So when he came to meet him, here was this man sitting on a golden throne, or a golden chair with the plants and golden spittoon even, I believe. All kinds of accoutrements that were extremely opulent. Oiled hair, fancy silk clothes, and Gadadhar Pandit, who is this? And then somebody recited a verse, and he, upon hearing this verse, he was stunned in ecstasy, and fell to the floor. The servant who was fanning him dropped the fan, the spittoon was knocked over. He saw the ecstatic symptoms manifest in Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and he became his disciple. So, like we might look at Brahmatirtha Prabhu's. Yes. He's living in a nice house, driving a nice car, nice bike. And as Priyadananda Maharaj likes to say, nobody does more service than Brahmatirtha Prabhu. I mean, this is a man who spends hundreds of hours trying to untangle knotty problems and conflicts amongst devotees. I mean, just hearing about them gives me a headache, you know. And he just spends hour after hour, unpaid volunteer work. And he's been doing things like this for years. Whenever I have a problem, I call Brahmatirtha and he gives me advice. He helps out. He talks to this person, that person for me. So externally, we could say, here's a very attached householder, living a comfortable life. But as he's sitting there in his comfortable chair in his comfortable office, he's doing all kinds of uncomfortable service for Krishna. Would you like to add to this?
What can you say? I'm not sure that that's a totally accurate description. My chair's not that comfortable. But the great danger for us in reading these verses. These verses are two-edged swords. So one edge of the sword is it teaches us something about renunciation, which we all need. And I find that when visiting sannyasis come, it makes a big difference in my life. Because being a grahasta, without a doubt, with rare exceptions, has a certain entanglement associated to it. And it really, you can't get around it. And so sometimes we need to be awakened. But there's a two-edged sword here. And the second edge of the sword is it's very easy for us to then make extremely judge a book by this cover judgmental statements. And we saw that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, for example. Ramananda Roy was put in that position where he was, a grahasta, a kind of sudra, I forgot the name. Kayasta Sudra, we have the reverse. Again, we go back to Chaitanya Charitamrita, where other parties were great sannyasis, but really attached to their own ego. So to judge a book by its cover is very dangerous. So if somebody's a grahasta or there's not a grahasta, it doesn't really say much about their service. It doesn't say anything about their heart. Nothing. It does tell us about their challenges. So, for example, the challenges of a brahmachari will typically be somewhat different than the challenges of a grahasta. Not that some aren't the same, but just, for example, living in one devotee, he came to see Hridayananda Maharaj. I mentioned his name, comes here. Paramananda, this is the son of Amarendra, who started the Krishna Lunch. And he's now living in Gainesville, going to law school, but he came one time to see Maharaj, to read down Maharaj, and his head was bowed very low. Maharaj, you know, I'm traveling doing this campus preaching program. I'm going everywhere in this campus preaching program, and I'm just thinking, you know, just me, a brahmachari, often I'm alone. Maybe I should be married to do this service. Voice dropped so low you could hardly hear the words. And Mark.
Okay. What else? Other comments? So there is still time. Anyone would like to say anything? No? Okay.
I really liked the class because when I joined, it was about 30 years ago, there was one verse that I particularly liked, and that's in the Bhagavad Gita, and it was, one who is friendly to every living entity certainly comes to me. And I don't know why that really stuck with me. That was one of the things. And I even challenged the devotees in a way. I asked them a trick question. What do you think of Jesus, you know? And I wasn't a born-again Christian because I couldn't get over their unfriendliness. When they said I got the right answer, luckily. We you know, worship Jesus as our guru and we respect Jesus. And I was actually just completely floored and I thought, well, these are the people I should talk to. Yeah, because they're friendly.
Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.